they go? Dad? Dad?
That's a clip from the eerie independent horror film called Skinamarink. It was written and directed by my fellow Canadian Kyle Edward Ball. Kyle spent 7 days shooting the film in his childhood home in Edmonton, Alberta. The budget was $15,000 Canadian, which works out to $11,267.25 in American money. Either way you account for it, the film's a hit. It's made a buzz in horror circles and has made more than $1 million and counting. If you listen to Beta enough, you know I've seen my fair share of horror movies over the years, but I have never seen one as weird and creepy as Skinamarink. It makes David Lynch's Eraserhead look like Sleepless in Seattle. And chances are Skinamarink may leave you sleepless, no matter where you live. Kyle joined us from his unhaunted home in Edmonton to talk about Skinamarink and how he went from a YouTube channel recreating nightmares to a feature film director.
Basically, my channel was people would comment nightmares they've had and I would recreate them. I would use kind of old Hollywood style effects. And I also, because I didn't have access to a bevy of actors, would have to get creative on how I would tell a story. So a lot of implying action instead of directly showing action. And when we did show actors, there would be very little performance. We would rarely, if ever, see their face. Over time, I had discovered that I actually kind of liked this style and found it to be kind of quite creepy and subversive. Also, through the life of my channel, I had leaned into the lo-fi of audiovisual format as well, and even doing stuff like playing with old-time radio and old-time cartoon audios to really kind of help buffer the narrative.
I'm gonna go upstairs to get some stuff.
So I always went into the intention of doing a style like that, and that's how I wrote the script, and that's how I filmed it. And I also always had the intention of, okay, if we're not seeing people all the time, probably be a little bit uncanny. Let's see if this pans out. And I would say for the most part, people have been reciprocated that and said, oh, it's uncanny, it's strange, it's weird. And I can't be more thankful that people are responding the way that I intended.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that makes it so distinct. One of the things that really captured my attention is the disturbing sound design. There's a lot of analog snap and crackle, as well as some hissing and humming. And it's hard to make out some of the dialogue, which there isn't that much of. What were you trying to achieve with the audio?
Yeah. So I wanted it to buffer the atmosphere. So at the end of the day, I really wanted it to sound and feel like an old movie from the 70s and not just like, let's say you watch the remastered, restored version of The Exorcist. I wanted it to feel like a movie that was forgotten and not taken care of.
Your father.
So that's why I had all the hiss and hum and also played with just the regular dialogue and sound effects to sound like it was recorded old. And then on top of that, I was even able to do neat stuff with the hiss and hum to even help propel the story. So even change the volume of the hiss and hum to do something simple like say, okay, we've changed the location or time has elapsed, or even do stuff like slowly, imperceptibly lower the hiss and hum as a scene is supposed to be building as far as tension, so that the audience is unconsciously leaning into the sound. So it was a great tool.
Yeah, and you used it to very good effect. And there is that one shot in Skinamarink where there is dead audio, no hiss or hum, and that is very powerful.
Yeah, I felt so good when I did that. And I don't even know if it's in the original script. I think I just had a shot of a dead hallway. And then when I got to editing, I'm like, what if I just cut the audio completely here? I wonder if that would be creepy. Wouldn't that be a neat thing to play with? So I did it.
One of the other things, the recurring themes in Skinamarink is the janky vintage cartoons that are playing on the TV screen. They play a really kind of important supporting role in the film, I'd say, especially this Max Fleischer cartoon from 1936 called Somewhere in Dreamland. Why mm-hmm. did you choose to use that cartoon?
So here's the fun thing about that. When I was little, my parents had picked up from like some bargain bin just a VHS tape of a bunch of these old cartoons. And the Somewhere in Dreamland one, I always remembered because it's a beautiful little cartoon, right? Even before Skinamarink, when I was doing Heck, I had reused it. And then when I wrote Skinamarink, I thought this is a perfect thing to feature because it's about a little boy and girl, a brother and sister. And it has them fall asleep and go into dreamland. What a cool metaphor that I can play with, right? And have on the screen and even do things like there's one part where I used it just to imply, okay, both of the kids are asleep right now. So it was a great thing to feature.
Mm-hmm. And there's a clip, I think it's from a different cartoon. There was a clip that you used really in a really interesting way where it was a dog. And then the dog, it seemed to be interested in this duck or something that was able to disappear.
It was a bunny, Presto
Bunny, that's right. Yeah. Is that a Fleischer cartoon?
I don't think that's a Fleischer cartoon, but I do know it's actually a bunch of cartoons down the line, proto-precursor to Bugs Bunny. It's not Bugs Bunny in his true, also copyrighted form, thank God, but it's supposedly the proto iteration of Bugs Bunny. And it was just a cartoon character making something disappear and reappear, which we see throughout the movie as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was interesting. I love the way you looped it. Like we kept hearing this one phrase from that cartoon over and over. Just the way it was very powerful.
Yeah, there's been a very creepy fan art someone did of that exact cartoon character with the dollhouse and its clutches that we see in the movie and blood coming out of the dollhouse. And I'm like, oh, what a creepy.
Yeah. Critic Brian Tallarico at RogerEbert.com said that you are, quote, willing to tell horror stories in a way that's both different for the genre and yet also like something we've all experienced before, unquote. Is that sensibility something you were consciously set out to do with Skinamarink?
Yeah. I did from the beginning say, okay, what if I told kind of the traditional haunted house story about kids, but told it in a slightly different way? So the experimental route, the uncanny route, and also a movie where the little kids are the only characters and the grown-ups are completely gone. Like usually in horror movies, they'll do something like the grown-up is the main character and they're kind of seeing things through the eyes of their children. Like, for example, in The Ring. In this movie, I wanted the two children to be 100% the stars of the movie with no grown-up actors to rely on because I really wanted us to see it through the children's eyes.
How come no one's come yet?
I don't know.
You wrote and directed Skinamarink, and you've said that the internet was your co-director. How so?
It all comes back to Reddit. I had started my YouTube channel and it wasn't really picking up steam until I started posting videos on Reddit. And then people on Reddit had really started picking up the channel. It never really 100% went viral, but it started getting steam from Reddit. And another thing too is inspiration from other analog horror on the internet. So, or even just other things like the subreddit Liminal Spaces, the subreddit Weirdcore. Me and my director of photography, Jamie, would use these in our lexicon when we were shaping the look of the movie. Then down the line, before I was even finished the final cut of the film, I had cut the trailer for the movie and posted it on the filmmaker subreddit, and that's where we got our distribution deal. So then after that, it really was weird. It always comes back to Reddit. When we had the infamous leak of the movie last year, people talked about it a lot on Reddit. It's insane. It all comes back to the internet and all comes back to Reddit. And also, in a weird way, I explicitly set the movie in a time where the internet hadn't quite broke yet, 1995, where the internet existed, but not in a lower middle class home like the characters in the movie.
Mm-hmm. You actually shot the film in your childhood home. What was that experience like?
Oh, it was wonderful. So I went into writing the script with the idea that I would film in my childhood home. It was great. My parents were fairly accommodating through the whole thing. They were excited to see their baby boy finally make his first little movie, like real movie, right, so to speak. Not that short films aren't real movies, but his first, you know, big movie. And there was other surreal parts too. Like on the final day, that's the first time we filmed in air quote Kevin's room, which was my room growing up and it has since become my mom's office. Mm-hmm. And I just had this weird moment in between takes where I'm like, this is weird. I'm filming a movie in the room that I had would have dreams as a kid about filming movies. It's all come weirdly back to this room. It was strange.
Yeah. Can you tell us about your creative partner, Joshua Buchalter, whom the film is dedicated to?
For sure. Yes. So my friend Josh, so I had been friends with Josh for years. We worked together at a camera store called VizTech in Edmonton. After we stopped working there, we remained close friends. I was looking to track down an assistant director for the movie, and there was a few people I had reached out to but were busy. So my friend Anthony was filming in Calgary, and then there was a few other leads, but they were also busy. And then I thought, okay, well, he doesn't have any assistant directing experience, but I have worked with him. I really like working with him. What if I reached out to Josh? And I was kind of expecting him to be like, no, Kyle. What really surprised me, he was like, oh, absolutely, Kyle. I'd be thrilled to do it. Yeah, let's do it up. Let's do it up. He was more than gung-ho, more than competent, more than great to work with. And unfortunately, he passed away shortly after we finished filming, which was heartbreaking. His family have been incredibly great through this whole process. The audio was still on his computer after he passed, and I had to reach out to them to get the audio. I gave them a little bit of time to grieve, but I probably could have, frankly, waited a little bit longer. But they were more than accommodating and also even nice enough to understand, you know, this must be awkward for you, Kyle, to have to reach out to us to get the audio. I know it's probably a difficult thing for you. And editing the movie, it was a challenge because throughout it, I was reminded of Josh, right?
Of course, yeah.
I'd like to think he's proud. He would, sorry, he's not.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he would.
He would be proud of how the movie turned out.
Yes, as you are too, I'm sure. And we're very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Kyle Edward Ball, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Skinnamarink.
Awesome. Thank you so much. You have a great day.
Kyle Edward Ball is the writer and director of the viral Canadian indie horror film Skinnamarink, now streaming on Shudder. You can find out more about Kyle and Skinnamarink at wpr.org/beta.
In comics and other forms of media, you see women in terms of their bodies. You see cleavage to sell popcorn. And I was like, you know what? I don't want that. I just want these women to be talking.
Coming up, the groundbreaking cartoonist, Barbara Brandon Croft. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.